Loving salutations at the lotus feet of our Sadguru Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, the beat of our hearts, the rhythm of the universe and the current that keeps it in motion, alive to the minutest atom. Beloved and most beautiful Bhagwan, you are also the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai, and we pray to you to please always remain so. Dearest God, keep us awake to your presence in us, around us, above, below and within us at all times. Sweetest Swami, you are all that ever matters and ever will. To your glory, with all our love and humility, we bow over and over again. Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream and we are coming to you live from Prashantinilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I thank you so very much for staying with us on this bright and sunny Thursday morning here in the ashram on the 8th day of October 2015. I hope you are experiencing the warmth of Bhagwan's love wherever you are, dear sisters and brothers. The current time in Prashantinilayam, the abode of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, is exactly 49 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Current climatic conditions in the Divine Valley are easy, breezy, pleasant and pleasing and just about perfect except for that tinge of humidity which I for one don't quite like, as it reminds me of places like Singapore and Chennai and Mumbai. So humidity, please be gone. But the good news is that we have been having regular rainfall almost every night over the past few days, which is really great for building our water table for the biggest event coming up here in exactly, guess how many? 45 days. 45 days from now, the 90th birthday celebrations of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba will be taking place at this moment on November 23rd, 2015. Of course, the celebrations will begin at least a week in advance, but today is the ultimate 23rd. 45 days from now will be the 23rd November that we've been waiting for the entire year. Our temperatures in the ashram are in the comfortable range of early 30s to low 20s, that is in Celsius, with a mix of sun and cloud. One forecast here is calling for heavy rains again in the evening, so I guess it's nice as long as it rains at night. All in all, life is peaceful and soul nourishing in our slice of heaven. And we are so looking forward to welcoming you for the most auspicious and historic event ever happening in recent history, and these are the celebrations in conjunction with the 90th birthday. So, dear listeners, hope you have firmed up your travel plans, already put in your request for time off and the rest, as Mother Sai awaits to embrace you in her infinite love very soon. With that, let's move on to the menu we are serving on Morning Glory this morning. Today, we'll continue exactly where we left last Thursday by catching up with Miss Aishwarya Anantabotla and two musical prodigies, Sai Rakshit and Sai Nath, to complete their narratives. So first, let's conclude our learning with love with Miss Aishwarya Anantabotla, a Sai young adult from MIT Boston. And here is the concluding part of her interview for your listening pleasure and your inspiration.
One day, someone shared with me a beautiful analogy from Swami. And I still keep the original quote of that pasted on my desktop, on my desk or on my wall. And I'll give you a slightly paraphrased version, but it made the second half of MIT so much different, so much brighter. Swami says, you, the human, you stand on one side of a tapestry or a beautiful carpet, and all you see are loose threads, hanging threads, knots. You say, what a mess this is. I don't know where these threads are coming from, where they're going, or what the bigger picture is. This is awful. But it's God who's standing on the other side of the carpet. He's the weaver, and he has the full picture. And God is saying, what a masterpiece I've created. I know what the entire picture is. And the analogy is very straightforward to our lives. We're local to only what we can do, to what we can achieve, and to do our best at that. But But God has a vision of the bigger picture, of what is supposed to happen, and things that we may never experience or we may eventually experience. So what this person had told me was, just remember that you're a roll of thread in the weaver's hands. So you do your duty just as the thread does. You follow the needle. You don't think about where the thread is coming from or where it's going or what it's supposed to form. It's meaning, don't look at the chemical engineer next to you and saying she's at the top of her batch, or the mechanical engineering and student, and say, you know, they're getting all sorts of recognition from the faculty. If you're doing your best and you follow the needle, you do the thread as the thread does, the masterpiece is in God's hands. At that point, you don't have to worry. So, like I said, trust is such a hard game. There's never immediate answers or results. But what is immediate, and what I'd love to share, is the sense of confidence, the sense of satisfaction, and even to generalize and say a sense of peace. Because when you've placed your trust in the hands of Swami or God, you've also placed with Him your worry, your anxiety, your fear of the repercussions or the fruits of your actions. Right? The classic example is studying. You put in your effort and you leave the results. But I mean that even in a broader sense of going about your daily life and every activity that you engage in. If you do what you know you're supposed to do and you do your duty, leave out the fear, leave out the worry, the anxiety. Turn all of that into a more positive energy that'll actually make your day brighter and better. It took me almost 2 years to think about this and to be able to practice it. And I guess the biggest example of trust is just having finished 4 years at MIT. I wasn't necessarily a topper. I wasn't necessarily on my way to becoming a Nobel laureate. And trust me, I have so many friends that are going in that direction. But I finished with a sense of confidence and satisfaction. And being able to be at peace with who I am and what I could produce. And the gratitude to Swami that He can take care of the rest of it. That's not my business.
That's a very good life lesson for not only young people, for everybody, I think, at all ages, to practice trust. We think of Him, but to trust that whatever is happening has a design, the confusion, the chaotic confusion has some sort of a pattern behind it.
Yeah, especially at that age, because the thing that sort of pull at you the most, people assume that it's just assignments and work, homework, lab work, or late nights. This is what is sort of affecting us the most. But it turns out that it's the aftermath of all of this. It's the stress of, did I do a good job? Am I going to get the top rank? Am I going to end up with an internship? That person got an internship, but I didn't get an internship. It's those things that take a bigger toll on our well-being and our ability to stay calm and stay serene than the work itself. Mm-hmm. It took me a very long time to understand that. And I hope that everyone listening to this also can relate to that.
Yeah, relate to it and also take that lesson from your experience that at the end of the day, on the other side of the carpet, there's a beautiful masterpiece being created. So be the thread that just follows the needle.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good.
So the next life lesson that I wanted to talk about was acting with Swami's teachings as our guide. This is something that every SSC teacher will tell us from day one. You know, what you learn here is not just to be in the classroom. Go out there and live implicitly with Swami's teachings as your guide. No need to say Sairam to everyone you see or hand out photos of Swami. No, that's not what Swami wants either. He wants us to live with His message at the core of every action that we take, every word that we speak. So I like to think of it as saying, you lead every second of every day as if you're still wearing white and white. It's not to say that, you know, again, like you're saying Sairam or doing pujans, but the way you carry yourself when you're wearing white and white, that you're a symbol of Swami's message, and also that everyone is watching you as a Sai student. Live with that character and that sense of strength and also Swami's teachings at your core every day, every second of every day. So as far as our own context and how it relates to us, some things are very black and white. Swami has very clearly said, don't take part in, you know, don't take meat, alcohol, drinking, smoking, whatever it may be. These are black and white. For some of us, for many of us that have grown up in a Sai organization, these are things that we've never touched. And we also know that there is probably a right answer in a scenario that we're faced in college. handling that situation, again, probably requires some creativity, but we know what the answer should be.
What should be the answer? If you have friends who are telling you, let's all hang out together, have a good time, you're part of a team that's working on a project that wants to socialize after hours together, how do you avoid that situation, or how do you handle it? Because for everything else, from morning till evening, you're working together, you're part of the same group, you're on the same team. But when it comes to socializing, which may involve alcoholic beverages or smoking or some sort of a wild environment, maybe pub night or something on the campus, mm-hmm. how does one handle that?
So I think a very big part of being a student is having to maintain a social presence. If you say that you're a saint and you pull yourself out of a social gathering because there is alcohol there, sure, maybe your academic work won't be affected, but maybe it might be. Maybe those people feel like they can't trust you as much, or they, you know, the work won't be shared equally in another context or another hemisphere. So I think to a certain extent, to a point that there's a limit, it's important to perhaps be involved in those contexts, but you know your job. So for example, many times after an internship in certain parts of the country, I had been somewhere in the Midwest where there's a lot less diversity. That's what we would work on a project for a whole night. It would take a very long time. And then everyone would say, let's go out for socializing. So I would join them because the boss is there. He's taking us out. He's treating us. But I make it very clear that I don't want alcohol. I don't take non-veg. But it would be almost disrespectful had I decided, no, I'm not going to participate because there is the presence of alcohol. And that's not to say that you don't know your limits. If you're in a social gathering where things are getting severely out of hand, even if you are not taking part in it and you know that your mind does not belong there, then it might be time to leave, even so. So often I think parents of our generation will tell us, no, if there is alcohol present, don't set foot in that room. But my suggestion or advice may be, think about the consequences of not being a part of that. It might be broader than you might imagine. So keep in mind your values. Your values are not to do certain number of or certain things, but apply them as the context requires you to apply them.
So be mindful of your own boundaries.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of phrasing it.
Hmm. Practical advice.
Yeah. Hmm. Tips, I guess, from someone who's been through undergrad.
Yeah. Because socializing is such an important, like an integral part of campus life.
It is.
And also when you're doing internships and you're working on a team and everybody wants to let their head down and put their feet up and go to a place and just order some drinks, and you're the only one who's ordering your apple juice or cranberry juice or Diet Coke, do you feel excluded? Do you feel the odd one out in such a setting?
So I've been fortunate enough to not feel excluded. I think I would feel worse if I knew that everyone was going to relax and I decided I'm not going to go, I'm going to sit in my room because there is alcohol present. And I know I would feel terrible if I went to that setting and said, no, it's wrong that all of you are taking alcohol. That's not what Swami says. You should not be, you know, doing a certain number of things. Swami's teachings are the lessons that guide my life, and my job is to live within those principles because I feel as though they're important. I feel that they're part of my core. But that doesn't mean that, A, I have to have this holier-than-thou attitude.
B, you can't be an evangelist.
Right, absolutely not. Or that I should completely steer clear of individuals that engage in such habits, because my job is not to be their parent or to preach to them in such a forceful context. So I think I've been fortunate enough that in many situations after an internship or after a project where we would go out, I would have just as much fun joking or relaxing or, you know, discussing the project further with my cup of apple juice. And I've never felt that way about being excluded.
And how do your peers react to your being a vegetarian or abstaining from any alcohol?
I think the first couple of times when we had gone out and they said, no drink at all. On your 21st birthday, it's a big tradition there, people, you know, because that's the first time you can legally participate.
Yes.
And people said, no drink at all? And I said, no, I'm not interested. And they laughed a little bit. They chuckled. But no one had a condescending sort of approach to it. They said, okay, the goal is for you to have fun on your birthday, to do what you want. So let's all go out to a restaurant. That's what we did. Or let's get ice cream. That's fun for everybody. That's fun for us too. Mm. We're not going to force you to do something that you don't enjoy. And I think my situation is very unique. I'm really grateful for the group of individuals I was able to live with and interact with at MIT. Many people with common sort of cultural background, but also many people that were open to this sort of attitude. And I know that experience is not the same in every university, even my sibling's university where she goes to school. That attitude is very different, and she had a very different form of a struggle. So I guess my experience is a little bit different in this regard. So some things maybe aren't as black and white as I had mentioned earlier. And for these guidelines where Swami has given us a very clear answer, the context still matters a lot, and the context in which you apply it and the scenario. But there's some things that I think are even in a more gray area. And these things come when we have to do things like sort out priorities, when we have to resolve conflicts, and when we have to choose the right company. These are all kind of spaces when the SSC manual doesn't have a clear answer. You know, do this when you see this. And choose only the people that have these kind of qualities are the right friends.
No. Swami said SSC manual is supposed to equip you with the tools to make the determination for yourself. So SSC manual cannot lay out every possible gray scenario and say, okay, let's role play. This is the scenario. Because as you live out, the program has already given you the tools of discrimination, discernment, to make your own judgment call, I guess.
Exactly.
Because it's very empowering. The whole program is intended to empower the individual, not to lay out do's and don'ts. It's not like an IKEA manual with a diagram.
How to build your life.
Yes, how to assemble your life. And there's a cross against the wrong way to put things together and the check mark for how to screw the back of the bed with the front of the bed. It doesn't work like that.
Exactly. It's meant to be a set of guidelines that you have to adapt to your world. Swami's in that world, but you have to adapt them to that context that's relevant. And I feel like somehow, sometimes that might pull youth away from, not realizing this might pull youth away from Swami, thinking that it's just copy and pasting what they've learned in SSC into life that makes you a Sai youth. And it's not that easy. Your job is to use those fundamentals in a way that's relevant, in a way that applies your own determination, or rather, your own discrimination. And it's remembering that that's really important. So there isn't always a simple answer in our manual, but a good litmus test, almost a good way to sort of start the process, is what I had said earlier. Would Swami be okay with me doing this? Would Swami approve of the set of things that I'm going to do next? If it seems like a very resounding yes or a very resounding no, then you know what to do. But it's when the answer is, well, I'm not sure, he might approve of this part, but not this part. It's at that time that you might go reach out to the resources that Swami has given us. So talk to other YAs that have been through this. They have fantastic advice because they've been there. Maybe they've made the mistake once and they have insight about it. You don't always have to reach out to your SSC teachers or to your parents, although they're also a great resource.
So it's very important to stay in touch with other young adults, YAs, so that you can learn from their experience, those who are just ahead of you in the game.
Yeah, I think
satsang, nothing short of that. What Swami says, good company.
Exactly. And I think sometimes when we're in the context of Sai Center or when we're meeting as a full study circle, sometimes the topics that come out are also very important, but sometimes you don't get to ask about personal situations or these gray area situations where you know Swami's teachings need to come into play, but you're not sure what to do. At that time, I think it's a great idea to have someone you think of as a mentor, somebody who's also perhaps a youth or finished the SSC program, also went to college in the U.S. or whatever your context might be. I've definitely relied on individuals like that. Call up certain people and say, hey, I don't really know what to do. You know, we share this sort of common background of Sai land, of Sai world. What do you think in the same space? What do you think? How should I approach this? I think that's an incredible tool that we can draw from the organization. Swami has given us the space, these institutions. So we just have to reach out. So I guess I wanted to give an example or something from my own time at college that relates to this acting with Swami's teachings as your guide. And the one I wanted to share is in fact one where I made a mistake at first, but hopefully I learned from the lesson. This past year, I signed up or was selected to be a teaching assistant for a laboratory class at MIT. It's a class that is a unfortunate horror for most electrical engineering students. Unfortunately, it demands 20 or 30 hours a week in the laboratory. These poor students, myself included, I took this class at some point, sitting there day in, day out, debugging circuits or working on how to fix them, how to build them. They have theory questions and they have practical exams. So I signed up to be a teaching assistant with the idea of hoping to relieve some of the stress of these students. You go, as a teaching assistant, you go into the laboratory and attempt to debug. So they show you what they've built. They say it's not working, and you sit down with them and painstakingly try to figure out what the problem is and resolve it. And I took the job with good intentions, but very quickly the entire staff realized how time-consuming the job became. They hadn't hired necessarily enough staff for the number of students that had signed up. It's a very popular class. So spending time with students to try and debug their work was like pulling teeth or pulling hair. It took so much time, so much effort, and we'd be really tired by the end of it and may not necessarily have resolved whatever it was. So most of us, instead of being patient with students or volunteering to spend extra time, we would run away from the lab after our scheduled hours. The professor would say, each of you are responsible for a minimum of 5 hours this week in the lab. Every assistant would not sign up for an hour more than their allotted time, and we would run off. Even if there were other students that had questions, people had written their names on the board asking for help, we would say, I'm sorry, we have to go to another class, or we have our own commitments, which is true. And we would run off saying, you know, that we've done our job, we haven't cheated. But there's this gnawing sense of guilt at you, right? That there's students here that have been sitting here all night and there's no one there to help them. And you potentially can, but you're running off because you have something else to do. So I just kind of let this go on and on. And one day I was administering practical exams for this class. So they have a 15-minute or 20-minute slot where they have to come and demonstrate what they've built. I ask them some questions. They build something for me, show me that it works, and I give them a score and they go. But if they don't show up for their allotted time slot, I can not give them marks, I can fail them, or I leave that to the discretion of the professor, the faculty. So one day a girl hadn't shown up for her slot, and I thought nothing of it. I just handed the sheet back and said, okay, professor will handle it. A few hours later, I get a phone call from the student. I'm not entirely sure how she got my number, through some mutual friends perhaps. But this girl is in tears, utter tears, and she said, I'm so sorry, I had a long night. I slept through the alarm, or the alarm didn't ring, and I missed the slot. It was a 9 a.m. slot. I never imagined something like this would happen. I worked for 30 hours on my lab. Please, please let me come and give the practical. And technically, I didn't have to. I could have easily just sort of walked off. But I said, okay, I'll come, I'll squeeze you in. I was a half an hour late for my next class. I said, you know what, go ahead. Come, let's do your practical. She did a great job. She almost got a full score. But it was what she said after that that really sent a wave of guilt through me. And she said, you guys, the staff, the assistants, you really make this class possible. Your dedication, the amount of time you're willing to spend with us, we wouldn't be able to get through this class if it weren't for you. And if I pass this class and I ever become a staff member, I'm going to spend as much time as people want from me. I'm going to stay as late as people want, because I know when you get stuck here, there's nothing you can do but hope somebody will come to help you. That just sent a wave of guilt through my thoughts, because every staff member knew that we would all just run out after our time was finished. Nobody had the patience to want to stay when people had more questions. So I decided that that approach had to change. So if I had another class, I would tell them that I would make time later in the evening and come back. If there were still students that had questions, I would come earlier or stay beyond the time that I was supposed to be there. All sorts of ways that I could do my best to try to help. Because she reminded me of something so simple, that what goes around comes around. At that time when we were students, we relied so much on the staff. And now when we're staff, we're their only lifelines. So that simple act of, had Swami been there, had we run that approach by Swami? It was a very simple answer. Swami would say, no. If you have the knowledge to help them, then you should be able to be there and help them. Why are you running off? It's a class, make time later. But that didn't strike me at that time. The very last life lesson that I have that I want to talk about is a quick one. It's to remember that you have a friend in God. To remember that Swami is always with you, Swami is always watching you, always there to be with you. When you leave your home for the first time, as was true in my case, you aren't sure who or what to believe or where to put your trust. We spend so much time just talking about trust. It's so easy to feel alone or to feel abandoned or not sure who to turn to, especially. Sometimes you feel as though your parents, you can't relate to them, or they aren't your side peers or your other peers around you. So a big part of finding Swami in the world around you, in your world, is just remembering that He's there for you. And He's always beside you, that He's always there for you. And, you know, He's the one that listens when you scold Him for yet another below average mark. He's the one that pulses your heart with that wave of guilt if you copied somebody's homework. He's the one that ultimately will hold your hand through whatever adventures life may bring. So the only bit of insight, or the only bit of, if I can say advice, is just remember to thank Him. Remember to talk to Him. Remember to remember Him. And one quick thing I'd like to share is, we had a discussion in SSC once, and the SSC teacher asked us, how do you remember Swami? How do you stay connected with Swami? How do you remember that He's always there, right? You know this phrase over and over again. Swami's here, Swami's there, beside you, around you. How do you remember that? So I raised my hand like the enthusiastic SSC kid, and I said, I love to write letters to Swami. So whenever I go to Puttaparthi, I'll write a letter, or I'll write something at home and post it in the mail and know that it's reached Swami, and that's how I connect to Swami. And the SSC teacher said, so Swami only reads your letters if you hand it to Him in person or if you post it in the mail. I mean, at this time, Swami was still in physical form. So he said, Swami only reads letters if you hand it to Him or if you post it? I said, I guess not. He said, no, Swami knows, before that thought emerges from your mind, through your hand and onto your paper, Swami knows what that thought is already. But if you need a space and a time to be able to articulate your thoughts and your feelings, whatever it might be on a daily basis, today I fought with my sister, today I made a mistake, today I did something really nice, whatever those feelings or thoughts might be, put them down on paper and write a letter to Swami every day. If you write in a diary, I have a habit of keeping a journal, address each journal entry as if it were to Swami. That way it's as if you're having a conversation with Him, an easy way for you to feel that you're putting your trust in Him, and a great reminder that He's there, He's listening, He's seen everything, He's heard everything that's happened, and now He's listening to it for a second time as you put it in words. I thought this was a brilliant approach. And at a workshop at the ZYC, we had the Zonal Youth Conference in the U.S., the workshop I was talking about this, and another girl said, this is a great technique, but I have a slight modification on this. I said, what do you mean? She said, so instead of writing to Swami every day in pen and paper, I send emails to Swami. And I said, wait, you have Swami's email address? I'd love to have this. Can I have Swami's email address? She said, no. What I mean is that I've created an email account for Swami. It has some login and password, and I don't know what that is anymore. And I just, every day, we send hundreds of emails every day for work or for school, but I take 10 minutes every day to send an email to Swami with whatever happened that day, whatever questions I have, and I just feel like I've placed my trust, my worries with Him. I know, and she said this, and this really touched me, she said, I know that if several months or several years down the road I open that email account, I know that every email will be read. That's the faith I have. So if this is a helpful technique and you want to put a modern spin on it and use your computer, send an email every day to Swami. It's a way of remembering that you have a friend in God.
and communicate with your friend freely.
Easily, freely. However you sort of can connect to him best.
Wonderful. It's very nice of you to share your learning with our listeners. You're obviously a very brilliant student and very articulate, and I really enjoyed listening to you, and I'm sure so will our listeners. So what's next on the go, Ishwarya?
So, Auntie, I've just finished my undergraduation at MIT. I'll be actually going back to MIT for my master's, and we'll see what happens beyond that after that.
Here's wishing you the very best of luck.
Thank you so much, and I'd really like to thank you and RadioSci for this lovely opportunity to share these few thoughts.
And I'm sure going forward, who knows, with all the skill set you're going to acquire at MIT, you might be able to help us at RadioSci to take Swami's message to a wider audience.
I would love to be a part of that.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard the conclusion of my two-part Learning with Love conversation with Miss Ishwarya Ananthabotula of America. I hope you enjoyed it and learned from Ishwarya's experiences. In case you have missed part one, you can find it in our Thursday Live archives of October 1st, that is last week's Morning Glory. And dear listeners, I just want to remind you that your feedback is priceless for us and we always look forward to it. So please email us your feedback, thoughts, suggestions about this interview and any other RadioSci programs at listener@radiosci.org. And now before we go any further, I have for you a very melodious treat. And if you are as crazy as I am about music from Prashanthi Nilayam, then please enjoy this song of longing and love composed by Mirabai, Jo Tum Todo Piya, and now sung by Brother Ashwat Narayan, a research scholar at the Sai University. This song will be followed by the conclusion of Radio Sai's Vishuprushti's conversation with two young musical geniuses, Sai Rakshit and Sai Nath. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, stay calm, and keep going with God leading the way. Jai Sai Ram.
Krishna, Krishna, kaun sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, tose preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo. Krishna kaun sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, tose preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo, Krishna kaun sang jodo. तरुवर मैं भये पतिया तुम भये सरोवर मैं भये मछिया तुम भये गिरिवर मैं भये छारा तुम भये चंदा मैं भये चकोरा जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नाही तोड़ो रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू
And then what prompted you to also go ahead and complete grade 4 in Trinity School of Music, learn Western Classical?
I first started with keyboard. So my dad joined me into this Western class, and I, in second standard or third standard, during that time, by that time I had finished fourth grades.
Oh, okay.
And from the fifth grade, it becomes more of the piano. You have to go to the piano and play more. And then my teacher, then he left for some other academy. And I was also more motivated into violin because I used to think it was something that I could explore more.
Yes.
And my first guru used to tell me not to play keyboard because he used to tell me that I play really flat. I have this keyboard fingering in my violin.
Mm.
And playing there, I was more interested in violin than in keyboard. So I just told my dad, let me just play violin, not keyboard, sir.
Yeah, this is good. I was
more serious into it. I wanted to pursue violin.
Yes, you're sort of settled that this is where your heart is.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And after that first initial chances in the Balikas, when was the time that you gave your first professional concert? I heard it was when you were age 6.
Yeah, it was in age 7, I guess.
Seven
or 8. So we had this bhajan hall constructed in our house. We wanted to construct a hall for bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
So we just constructed it, and it was the day that I put my poonal as well. So I just had my upanayanam done, and the very evening, we asked my guru T.V. Ramani sir to play in our house in the bhajan hall so that we could all listen to him, and T.V. Gopalakrishnan sir also came to listen to us. And when he came to my house, he told me, you also come and play with me. So he took me on stage, and that was my first concert.
Well, in your house?
In my own house, in my own bhajan hall. With my guru and...
Yeah, wow. And it was a Sai Bhajan session.
It wasn't a Sai Bhajan session. It was a Carnatic session.
Okay.
So it was like a proper Carnatic concert started off with a Varnam. Shri Raga Varnam, I still remember.
Mm-hmm.
And... Sir played swaras for the songs, and I just played the songs along with him, and that was my first concert in my own house.
Okay, so after that you slowly came on to the stage, and now I heard that you were in the US for May and June, right? Is that right?
April and May,
you were in US and you had the chance to accompany so many great artists.
Swami's grace. So, even there it was all because of Swami. I went to the Sai Center in US, in New York, and everyone were so inviting, and they told me, and they had seen my performance in front of Swami on 24th April, I guess. They had seen the performance, and I had taken my violin with me because I had to keep in practice. So they told me to bring the violin, and I played there. And after that, there was this person that my aunt knew, because my aunt is in US. She knew a person who was a Sai devotee, and she wanted me to play a concert for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and played a concert there for her. And there someone else came and listened to me, and I got more concerts like that. So even then it was all Swami's daya and guidance, because of which I was able to play a few concerts there.
Wow, amazing. And you have also had the chance now to play along with your guru.
Yeah,
especially, yes, with Kanyakumari Ma. I think that is such a great blessing, actually, to sit on the same stage and accompany her.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it in Tirumala last 2-3 years.
Playing with the gurus is what everyone aims for, because when you go to a guru and your guru is such a legendary artist, you always want to keep playing with her and keep learning more. So the first concert I played with my guru was in Kanchipuram. It was the 77th birthday anniversary of Periva. So our guru organized a 77 violin ensemble with most of them her students itself. So that was the first time I was able to play with my guru. And every year on 15th August, my guru plays in Tirumala.
Mm-hmm.
And that time, she normally takes around 15 violins. So, that year my guru wanted me also to come be a part of that this. So that was so we had this rigorous practice sessions in our house, and we used to practice every day. And on August 15th as well, in the morning, we'll get darshan, and we'd come back and practice. Then we'd have a rehearsal and then go and play. So it's a very different experience than normally playing a concert, because you have your guru, you have your inspiration, you have your role model playing in front of you. Mm. And just playing with her and accompanying her is a very... It's a wonderful experience.
Oh, and so you have had the chance to play in Tirupati and in Puttaparthi.
Yeah.
And you've been doing that almost like every year. Amazing. So in some ways, God has been so much a part of your life.
Yes,
right?
Swami has been my... Yeah, he's the only one who keeps us going, and he's the one who has been guiding us.
Yeah. If someone had to ask you... who is God, or how do you think we can please God? How do you think we can attain God? What are your thoughts?
It's a very broad concept, isn't it? Like, everyone has their own views, but what do I say? It's like Swami is God, and I don't think I can define God.
Yes.
Yeah. Swami is God. That's the only thing. And he's the one who guides us, and he's the one who we are to follow and reach him. So that would be my this. So for that you have to do sadha, seva, like Swami says. Follow whatever Swami tells us to do. That's the way to reach God. So that would be my opinion.
Amazing. I think that's all. Life is very simple.
Yeah.
When you have that clarity, as a 15-year-old, you have this clarity. I think that is his blessing. Yeah, and you said we need to follow Swami. Can you tell me what is that one or two things of Swami's teachings that you like the most and you definitely want to follow all your life?
I think anything Swami says is something that keeps you that makes you want to follow it. And I don't think I can point one or two, but even then, like, the first saying, I guess, was, help ever hurt never, right? So, that was the first saying I ever heard. So, that very concept intrigued me. So, that is something that I would like to follow, because I know even Swami says that even if you can't help a person, don't be of a hindrance to him. So that is one thing that I would try to follow with Swami's help, and love all, serve all, everything, I guess. Mm. All his teachings are something to be followed. And something that with his grace and with his daya, I can try and follow it a bit. And
wonderful. If you want to express your love for Swami through music, if I tell you that, okay, Bhagavan comes here now and play Rakshit, anything that you love the most, what would you like to offer to him?
I guess in 2009 or something, my dad showed me a recording of he sang Jagadodharna in front of Swami in Bangalore, and I still remember Swami was in his wheelchair then, so he came down and he told the students to make him get up from the chair, and he stood in front of the singer and listened to it for the whole part of it, and blessed him. The students even offered him a chair to sit, and they offered him a hand, but he just said no, and he just stood in front and listened to the whole song and then sat. It was in Bangalore. I don't remember the singer's name properly.
Isn't Kumar?
Kavalam Shri Kumar. Exactly. Kavalam Shri Kumar. So, that was the song that inspired me a lot. So, if Swami were to come, I guess I would play the same thing.
Please, if you don't mind, if you can render that.
With pleasure.
Bhagavan so many times used to say that the Lord is Ganapriya. You know, Bhagavan is someone who is so fond of music, and we had the chance to see that, you know, how Bhagavan used to be so thrilled and I was so happy. You should see that, you know, music is the easiest way actually to please Swami, you know, to get His grace. So really, you feel so blessed and so grateful to Him that, you know, He's given this blessing.
Absolutely.
To really connect with Him. And music is such a pure and such an easy medium to connect with Him. He has in fact told you that, you know, you are going to come frequently, and I think you have been doing that. It's really so beautiful to hear that and to see that you've been doing this and relishing it.
Absolutely, yeah. There is, I have to thank Swami because he for giving me this opportunity to even come and play in His presence one, and for the whole beginning of giving me the opportunity to enter into this wonderful field of music and play for Him and play in front of Him. So
amazing. So now you have, one way you have achieved what so many musicians aspire for in their lives, you know, to play in His physical presence. You have done that and you have lovely memories of that and you continue to do that. But now that He's also, you know, given you this chance to be in this field of music, do you have any aims or any goals for you set for yourself in terms of your career in music?
I think I'll keep practicing, I'll keep working towards this and follow His sayings and whatever my guru teaches me, and hope to reach the top and play in front of Swami again. That would be absolutely wonderful. So
wow, fantastic. I mean, it's so amazing that, you know, whatever it is, your goal still remains that to come back
and play in front of Swami.
That is playing in front of Bhagwan. Amazing. All the best, and thank you so much for coming to the studio. And it's been really a very, very ennobling experience.
Thank you.
Sairam. Sairam, Sainath, and a warm welcome to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sairam, brother.
You had the chance today to perform in the Sai Kulwant Hall.
Yeah.
This was the first program of the 89th birthday celebrations, and you had the chance to accompany Sai Rakshit in the performance. So how was it for you? What is it that you're going to take back with you from today's experience?
Just love, Swami. Today's concert is a dream come true. Actually, 2 days or 4 days before, Rakshit's father called my father and asked that there's a concert for Rakshit in Sai Kulwant Hall, can your son play? My father, actually, I'm having my semester exam. Today I'm having an exam, so I have left. As Rakshit's uncle says, I have left a small penny for an empire of cosmic power.
Wow.
So I said my dad that nothing is important for me. Swami first, everything next. Like that, my policy is that. But by Swami's grace, this is my 6th concert in Kulwant Hall. But even though I am playing concerts outside in Chennai, like that, but when I come to play a concert before Swami, there's like something I have to play good. As there's a policy of in concert in Kulwant Hall means not a concert, any program before Swami is to please Swami and not the audience. So even though he's sitting in omnipresence, but it's something like, what to say, fear. I have to please Swami. If he gets disappointed by my playing, what would happen? So that's my main aim. That's why before, in Kulwant Hall, before all the songs today I played, I close my eyes and, Swami, please play on behalf of me. Even though I am playing for you, I should not play anything wrong which disappoints you.
Like, it is paramount that it has to be your best whenever you're performing in front of Bhagavan.
Yeah. It should not be my best. It should be like by Swami. That's it.
It should be something that he
Even I play a little, it should be, he should, he's at least.
Yeah.
He should be happy.
Should be up to his expectation and his liking.
That's it. That's it.
Amazing. So you must be having wonderful memories of playing so many times in front of Bhagwan.
Yeah, my first concert in Sai Kulanthal was on 24th April 2010. Mm-hmm. Actually, that concert was on 14th April. Swami has went to Delhi that year, so it was postponed to 24th. And for that concert, I had to go for an audition in Chennai. And it was filtered. And last I was selected, I got a call from the judges that you are selected for playing before Swami. So, normal. So, the plan was that we had many rehearsals. I used to, me and my dad and my mother used to go in his scooter, take the gadam, go to Vadapaini, there's some samitis. So, and we used to practice there, and we had planned that my guru is Padmashriti Chikunayakram, and his uniqueness is in his playing is he used to throw the gadam in air and catch it. Mm. So it is his uniqueness. So what my mother gave, this idea was given by mother, you do like that, it would be a different thing before Swami. Swami would like it. So we, in the language of music, we used to say that Korvai.
Mm.
Korvai, in that only he used to catch that gadam. So we planned a Korvai for that, especially for that, so that it I can throw the gadam in the air and catch it. And I did not see Swami when I threw that. First of all, when that was the first time I saw Swami so closely. Usually, I started coming to Parthi from 2000-2001. I used to come for Navaratri leave, that is that quarterly leave.
How old were you then?
Yeah, that 2001 I was some 6 years, 5 years.
Mm.
So that time I used to sit at last Kulanthal near that water tank. So I used to sit there and see Swami. I used to jump, see Swami, and that was the first time in my life I saw Swami. I was seeing like that. Ah, like that I was seeing Swami as if I have not seen anything before. So I was seeing like that, and so I played that Korvai, and I did not see Swami. I was concentrating on that Korvai. So Swami started laughing. Swami started laughing and told in Tamil, if you see that video, they kept a close up on Swami. Swami told in Tamil, Podum. Podum means okay, stop, it's enough.
I mean, you don't have to do these antics.
Not antics, it was a weight. Actually Ghatam is a weight. So I played this in 9th to 10th, that summer leave. Mm. It was during that summer leave when I passed from 9th to 10th.
Mm.
So it was an weight. Many of them should make fun of me that I am, Ghatam is bigger than me. So Swami laughed and said, Podum. So that I knew that meaning, that what I have done is, after that concert, when Anil Kumar sir came running after Swami went, and he came and hugged me. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, do you know what you have done?
Mm-hmm.
You have achieved a big thing in your life, that I have never seen Swami laughing like this for the past 4 years. This is after 4 years, I have seen Swami laughing like this.
So heartily Swami laughing.
That when you laugh, that body would shake, no?
Yeah.
So like that Swami laughed at that time, when I threw the gadam on the air.
Wow.
And he came running and hugged me, and he caught hold of my shoulders and did like this, do you know what you have done in your life? So at that time I
got, what a blessing,
knew the meaning, what I have done. Till date, that is the only achievement which I have done, and there's nothing. Even if I do anything after, in the future also, that is the only thing. No, nothing.
Nothing can match that.
Yeah. It is an achievement, that's it.
Amazing. I think all these years of training, I mean, if you look at your life, you studied under such a legendary ghatam player. You have learned from Vikku Vinayaka, sir. And I would say that was the fulfillment of all the learning, because, you know, next year Bhagwan is not there, physical form. That was the time, 2010 is the year when you had the chance to perform. That was your first performance.
Yeah, that too, it was a correct 1 year duration. Swami left his physical presence on 24th April 2011. Yes. Yes. I did my first concert on 24th April 2009. Only the year 10 yes. and 11 was different.
It's the year before he has given you, your best, life's best moment.
Yeah.
And I think that is there for you to cherish for your entire life.
Yeah, it's a great blessing.
Amazing. I think that would have only increased your love for Swami, right?
Yeah.
Do you miss him now?
His physical presence. That's it.
Otherwise you
feel him. As a body, I miss him.
But otherwise you feel him all the time.
Yeah, as I said before, whatever I do on a daily basis, I compare it with him.
Like?
When I drive a bike, I used to think how if Swami sits in my bike and he drives, I would think. If I wear a coat suit, I would think how Swami would be in that coat suit. You have seen that photo of Swami keeping his hand like this and a plate tumbler would be before him.
Yeah.
I used to think when I before eat that if a mother feeds a baby, she would catch the top of their baby's head and put it in his mouth. I used to think like that before I eat a curd rice or rasam rice. I used to think, I take close my eyes and think as if I feed Swami, like that.
See, he's so much a part of you, every moment.
Yeah. Even if I see something which is very costly or thing, if I think I want it, after that I go to, I do decorations for Swami in Sundaram.
Mm-hmm.
Abode of Swami in Chennai.
Yes.
So, I used to play Naal. Not yes. in Sundaram Bhajan. So, my main motive is to do decoration for Swami. In the Swami's altar. That like keeping water for him, cleaning his chair, keeping kerchief for him, putting garland for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I get the thinking of that difference in colors. When I do decoration to Swami, I get such thinking that if I keep this color, this too will be... That color combinations I would get nice.
Hmm.
Otherwise, even if I come to home or wear a dress, I will not get a combination of that color. But when I go up to Swami's altar, the near chair, or when I do decorations, I don't know how I get that thinking. If I keep this color flower to Swami, it would be nice for him.
Hmm.
If he wear this color garland, it would be nice for him. Like that. So
because you are so much tuned to him. You think about him so much. So automatically, you know, at some level, your thought process and the cosmic thought process becomes one.
Yeah.
You know, those are the moments of ecstasy. Those are the moments of extreme and inexplicable joy. Amazing.
And so he gave me another chance in his physical presence in that same year for that past Balaikas alumni meet.
Yes. Oh, you came for that also?
Yeah.
In November?
Yeah. I played...
November 2010.
Yeah. He gave me that. In his omnipresence, he gave me 4 chances. This is my 6th concert by Swami's grace.
Like Sai Rakshit, you also been coming.
Yeah, I think courts in Swami's grace.
Yes. You also been coming. Wonderful. It's really beautiful. You know, how Swami touches our lives and becomes so much a part of our lives, right? He's so much becomes a part of our thinking, our breath, our everything.
He's a part of me, frankly speaking.
Amazing. And you're someone, I hear, who also listens to Radio Sai.
Yeah. Before, as I say, I used to hear a lot of concerts in my cell, I used to have a list of songs or list of, called Taniya Vartanam, yes. played by many musicians. Now it's a list of fleeting moments and lasting memories.
Okay, this conversation with former students.
Yeah. It's a daily duty for me like that. To hear FMLM. It's a duty for a day like
wow.
that.
Wow. Why are you so glued to fleeting moments?
Love. That Swami's love, as you say, love of a thousand mother. that love, how he has given to the students.
I think it's, and it is that same love that is coming to you also.
Yeah.
In so many ways, you know. Here is a Lord, if you, even if you do not do anything for him, he will run and he will want to do so much for you. And now, you know, when you love him intensely, you can only imagine how much he will shower you with. And that is what is happening in your life. And he's given you today this most blessed chance of being in Prashanti and starting his birthday celebration, being part of his 89th birthday celebration.
Actually, this was an, I didn't, it like an, a dream. It was planned suddenly, we came, did a concert, like that it was.
Yes.
As
he
you
planned
say,
it.
As some, I hear it from one of Swami's children, you will not know when a miracle is done, you will not have that and that presence, and when you think about that, you will not know how it happened.
Yes. God's grace is always very unexpected.
Yeah.
But it always leaves you thrilled at the end of it. And that is what has happened today also. Amazing.
That's it. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Even sometimes I used to think, if I take Swami on a doubles in my bike.
He's very much the hair part of you. He's the one who's playing through you.
I used to think if Swami sits in an orange robe in back of my bike, I and he, as he likes driving. So, I used to think, how if I go in an empty road with Swami enjoying, so happy to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, life cannot get anything better, you know, brother, because If you all the time have him as your friend, that is one of the most
as I heard in
beautiful relationships.
One of the fleeting moments, lasting memories, where Vijay Sai sir says, "Have you experienced him as a God? No, I have experienced him as a love.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not as a God. Do you know him as a God? No, I don't know.
Yes.
As he says.
But that is the most beautiful relationship.
Yeah,
to have him as your beloved, have him as your friend, and you are experiencing that. And I can only thank Bhagwan for having blessed you so much, and I'm grateful to Swami that, you know, that you are here and you could share, and you know, and we are inspired, you know, listen to you, and just take this opportunity again to only intensify our love for him. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank
for
you
coming to the studios.
Sairam.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Sathya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Devotion to thee.
show.